Hey, you guys, welcome to the Listen Bitch podcast, your go-to destination for unlocking your full potential and embracing the extraordinary possibilities within you. Thank you for joining me today on a journey of self-discovery and empowerment as we explore the transformative power of stepping into greatness. Come into alignment with the God-given gifts, unleash your soul, and learn to co-create a life you love. As you become the writer of your destiny, here on this podcast, you're going to find that inspiration, practical tips, and the sometimes abrasive nudge to take the leap of faith towards your dreams. You are in the right place. Buckle up so we can unleash your inner badass. You guys, I'm seriously excited today to introduce you to Gina Tramaco. She is a gorgeous powerhouse, podcast host of Women Your Mother Warned You About. This is how I met her. Phenomenal podcast. You guys can catch up on some episodes there. She is currently in the middle of writing a book, and she is a sales genius and an improv queen. So I'm excited to introduce her today, and we're gonna get back to rehumanizing conversations, you guys. So hi, Gina. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, Brandon, I am so excited. Okay, I gotta tell you a quick story, right? So
Okay.
I'm going to bed last night, and I had my phone like on the sound on for whatever reason. It like did a ding, and going to bed with my husband, and he's like, "Who is Facebook messaging you at midnight?"
Ooh.
Right? Like, you know, it's the Facebook message, and I'm like, "I don't know," and I'm like, "I don't know," and he goes, "Well, let's look."
Ooh.
I'm like, okay. And he's like, "Brandon, what guy is that?"
Can I just tell you a story now? Okay. So my husband had surgery yesterday, and we go into this process, and the doctor calls us back, and he's got his IV in and he's ready. So I get to sit with him before they actually take him in. And the doctor's like, "Hey, so as soon as I'm done with his surgery, I'm gonna come in, I'm gonna grab you. Or I'm gonna tell you how it went and everything, and then we're gonna take him to recovery, and then a nurse will come and get you to take you back with him." So I'm like, "All right." So even before that, okay, I'm watching the people that I'm sitting next to, that their people are back there, and like the nurse comes out and she's like, "Jerry, Sally," like calling everyone's names, right? And I'm like, "Okay, this is cool." Well, when I got called back to go see my husband, the nurse called on the phone and said, "I need Benjamin Lemon's person." And so I'm like, "Okay, that's fucking weird." Okay. Anyway, this whole time, right, I'm sitting in the waiting room, and all the people that I showed up with, like their doctors had come out, talked to them, said how the surgery went. I was told it was an hour and a half. Okay. It's been 2 hours. I heard him call a code. I'm like, "Great, my husband's dead. Like, he's dying. They're not telling me shit. All the people I came with aren't there anymore. It's new people, and their doctors are coming out." And I'm like, "Okay, what the hell is going on?" So about 2.5 hours later, I hear the phone ring for the receptionist, and she's like, "Oh, Benjamin Lemon's person." I was like, "What is going on with people?" The receptionist took me back to my husband in recovery. I never saw a nobody said my name. And so the recovery nurse finally comes to me, okay? And she's like, "I just want to make sure your name is Brandon, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "I asked him a few times because they thought he was just super high, because he kept saying, 'Yeah, can you get my wife Brandon?' Because he's after surgery, he's all groggy." And she's like, "I just didn't know what to expect." I'm like, "None of you guys talked to me today because of my name." Like, it was so, I was just like, "This is crazy." She's like, "I didn't know what to expect. If you were a big dude, if I had to say they, them, I just was very confused." And I'm like, "Oh my God." It was hilarious. So yeah, I totally thought my husband died because everybody was afraid to say my name. So it wasn't him that flatlined. It was just nobody wanted to say my name. Literally, the receptionist is like, "Benjamin's wife?" I'm like, "Yes." It
Yeah,
was
they flatlined.
flatlined.
They
What the
flatlined
hell?
them. Wow. I mean,
She's like, "Yeah."
talk about topical for rehumanizing conversations.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of stuff, doctors and
Yeah.
healthcare with using improv, and the patient experience continues to suffer
Yeah.
because of shit like that.
I know.
Like, don't be scared. Just be like, Brandon, is there a Brandon here? Like,
Yeah,
call
right.
Brandon and
Right.
then stay behind your window.
Yeah.
I'm afraid Brandon's going to punch you out.
It's so, it was so crazy. She's like, do you get a lot of shit for it? And I'm like, kind of, but like today sucked. My heart rate was elevated. I was spiraling out of control. I'm like, man, no one's talking to me. That means something really bad happened. So, and yeah, it was just, it was crazy, but it was good. He's good. Everything was good. And the people were so great. Once they actually did talk to me, they were like super, super great, but it was still just like, it was weird.
I'm going to share this story. I'm going to be doing some training up in Chicago with doctors who specialize in using improv in hospitals.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring this story to the table.
Do it. Wow. Yeah. It was pretty wild. It was wild, but we got through it. Whatever. He's home. He's safe. He's good. He's healthy. That's what matters. So it's fine. It's fine. So how long have you been, because you actually do improv, don't you? Like, and I've seen you do some acting too. Like I saw you run some things. How long have you been into that?
So, you know, way back when I was a wee child, I've been in the arts since I was a kid. So, I mean, I got into theater when I was in high school. I got into improv my freshman year of college. So I've always been involved in some kind of performance related something, singing, dancing, you name it. And then when I left Chicago and came to South Carolina for a job, I was super burnt out corporately, and I'm like, I'll take a refresh improv class to like get my attitude in check. And nobody knew what it was, and I'm like, what is this place that doesn't even know what improv is? And so the only way it could exist in my community was for me to create it. So I created it 16 years ago so I could have an outlet. But first I had to actually create it so I could have the playground.
Right.
I could actually teach people. And within a year, I built a theater. Like I wasn't expecting that, and then that happened, and then it grew. It grew into like a mini second city of Chicago, if anyone's familiar with that. So like 5 levels of classes and shows 4 nights a week, and next thing you know, I own a comedy theater and a training company, and it just kind of snowballed. I kind of leaned into it. It was a hobby that I leaned into, and then COVID crushed it in 2020 and shut down our physical brick and mortar theater. And you know, I walked away for 3 years, and then I started performing in some shows locally to like keep my creative chops going, because there's so much to be said about getting on a stage and performing. If you're any kind of speaker, presenter, trainer, salesperson, leader, I mean, you name it, if you've got to get up in front of people, being able to have a stage where you're like doing a show really gets your confidence.
Yes.
Really gets you like so comfortable in front of an audience. And so I was missing that because improv's always kept me really in tune to being a really good runner. So someone reached out to me and said, hey, they're doing the Tony and Tina's wedding here. And I happened to be the director of marketing for that show in Chicago for like 3 or 4 years.
Oh my, that's awesome.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, I know that show backwards and frontwards. Like, but I was never in it. They kept trying to get me to be in it because I was Italian, but I was behind the scenes, but I knew the show. And so the director said, would you co-direct the show with me? So I co-directed it and starred in it as the bride's mother. And that spun off this relationship with a local theater called Long Beach. And then the next interactive show he wanted to do was 80s Prom. And he's like, would you be in 80s Prom? And so I was in 80s Prom playing the drama teacher of all things. And I really got to play with it. And then she had like, have you ever watched Schitt's Creek?
Yeah.
Okay. So Moira, I kind of emulated Moira, and throughout the show, I would change wigs. So this character just kept coming out like this, gave me the creative freedom to do that. And then he moved into a space where he had an extra space for a rehearsal space. And he said, do you want to bring your improv classes? And I was like, kind of like moved on. And then all of my former teachers, like, we want to come back. And my former performers, like, we want to come back. And I'm like, okay. So we started again in July of 23 as a school. And I have a full bench of teachers. And
nice.
They perform once a month because that's more than that right now. Like I can't handle managing a team to run a theater. So I'm like, you guys want to do a show once a month, you're done. And it keeps everyone's chops going. And I still teach classes, my chops going. And that's where we're at. It's exhilarating. It's pretty cool watching people evolve through these classes. Some of the most uncomfortable people trying to get out of their comfort zones. Like they purposely sign up for the torture.
Yeah.
And then they transform. From torture to transform.
Uh-huh. Isn't that like the whole idea of life? You know, we're going through the things and it sucks at first and we're not good at it. And then all of a sudden we have that aha transformation and everything has changed. Is this, how has it improved where you are with sales and marketing doing the improv?
Gosh. I didn't like say, I wasn't in an official sales capacity for a lot of my career. Because I didn't think of myself as a salesperson, but I was an entrepreneur for a very, very long time, and still. And you have to sell as a business, right? So I didn't see myself in the traditional sales role. I kind of was like, well, you gotta sell, like, you gotta do. But what improv does is it has made me a really good, curious human being.
Yeah.
Because improv is very playful, and kids' games is founded in kids' games, and it keeps my childlike ways, which we lose as adults. And you've got a lot of kids, so you know how that
mm-hmm.
like that childlike way of curiosity. I'm like, ooh, but why are you guys doing it like that?
Yeah,
tell me more, right? And it's that constant, like, really leaning in and being curious and not selling. I'm just like, oh, okay, I think we can help you. Like, here's some ways I think we can help you. And it's just kind of that flow. And then when you get objections because of what we do in improv, with the yes and concept, our job is to listen, validate, and then pivot to collaborate. So, oh, we're too expensive for you. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And here's some other ways that we can work with you. And not, like, letting it throw you, because we're so accustomed to being thrown off on stage that it's actually become a high. And I realized this in the past year and a half, and I'm writing about it, that for improvisers, especially improv comedians, we have rewired our brains to literally get high off of.
Right.
Like, I fail on stage, laugh at me.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, you like me. Oh,
yeah.
Let me fail again. And it's like, you think about children, like every time you laugh at them, they do the thing.
They do it over.
Over and over until you stop laughing. And even if, you know, think about like when a kid maybe, well, think about every time someone falls, we even as adults laugh.
Yeah.
It's a nervousness that we do. But if you start to embrace that you can actually have fun in failure, then it's like, I look like, where can I fuck this? Where can I break this? Where can I break it out of the mold that it's currently in, because the current mold is getting complacent and not as good as it once was? How do I keep changing dynamics? It's okay if I fail.
Yeah. And that's so much of what I tell my listeners, is that number one, a lot of them don't have an outlet. They don't get outside of themselves. So they're ruminating on their problems, not how to, you know, creatively move past it or move through it, right? So they're ruminating on bullshit and not finding that extra hobby. And I think anyone that's listening, if you have anything like this, I think this sets you up for everything. Because even the thought leaders that I listen to are like, the world is a stage, the world is a stage. And I'm talking, these people are from the early 1900s, okay, talking about the world is a stage. And that's it. So if you can actually get on a stage, I think that sets up a perspective for you to realize that you are just playing a leading role in your own life. Literally.
Oh, I love that. I love that. You really are. And the other piece of this that people forget about, like they're afraid in front of the audience. And really, the audience is there looking at you for some kind of guidance on a journey.
Yep.
And if you reverse your thought process of like, oh my gosh, they're staring at me, I might fail, I might look stupid. And they're just looking at you in awe going, I'm happy it's you up there, not me.
Yes.
So no matter what you do, we're going to applaud for you because you got up there. And if you take that mindset of like, okay, and you lean into the audience, and you're like, so what do you want, audience? And you teach them. I was teaching this last night of slow down. You don't got to be talking the entire time. You don't have to say something brilliant all the time. You can take a say anything. And I demonstrated it as I would do exercises. I'm like, so did anybody notice that I didn't know what I was talking about?
Yeah.
They're like, I'm like, because I waited till I figured it out. I didn't panic about it. It was just
quiet.
I read the audience. Mm-hmm. What does the audience want? That's mm-hmm. what we give them. And every audience is different every night. So think about this, your life in general, your business in general. Mm-hmm. You have different audiences and things are going to resonate in different ways. So just be hyper aware.
That different audience is how we actually grow, right? That's how we expand. Because if you say the same thing in front of the same people every single day, it's the magic isn't happening. We want the different audiences, you know?
We want the different audiences, and then we need the different messages for the different mm-hmm. audiences, right? So one message resonates with one audience, sales 101, whereas a different message resonates with a different audience. But if you are saying the same things over and over again, right, it's like wah, 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 and then the brain, right, because it creates patterns, and the brain yeah. can actually start to tune you out, you actually have to unexpected. And that's why we talk about in comedy that the keys of comedy are repetition and contrast. And repetition mm-hmm. is very interchangeable with relating, relationship, right? If you yeah. and I can connect, like you and I have this connection, we have some very similar things. I'm like, yay, I can swear today. Yay, yeah. she's bold and badass. Yay, right? We have that connection
mm-hmm.
and we can talk about things like, you know, your husband's surgery, and we find the funny in it because of it. Now, on the opposite of that, the contrast, the unexpected, doing things that you would never expect me to do. Like if I just all of a sudden broke out into a cartwheel, you might laugh because you're like, what the heck is she doing, right? It's
yeah.
like an unexpected behavior. Mm-hmm. So those are your two keys to comedy, is like disrupt in a fun way. Give people attention.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I think I love watching. I have a friend that is growing his comedy show, and I'm watching just the growth from his first show and that being uncomfortable to find that contrast and to find the wow factor. It's that, like, how can I, the shock value, right? Of just like, I'm going to be cool about this. And then there's some shock value, just watching how he's grown that and just kind of flex that. It's a really cool, it's a cool thing yeah. to watch.
I can't say this on the show, but something struck me last night of contrast that I said just to get my husband's attention. And he's like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, that was good, wasn't it? I'm like,
yeah.
Do a really naughty improv stand-up show. I would totally do that.
I love that. No, your husband and my husband have a lot in common, because the what's wrong with you comes out of my husband's mouth so many times. It's like I'm the teenage boy stuck in a woman's body.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Oh. My husband's constantly calling me a pervert.
Yeah. I mean, mine's just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because it is always, and he'll always look at me because he knows exactly what anything, I make everything dirty. So anything that's said or kids say something, I'm looking at him side-eye and he's just like, you're fucking crazy.
You know, and I do it just to get a rise out of it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It makes him laugh, and it's fun, and it's, we're very alike. So
yeah.
When I, like, you know, do that, and I'm like, that's what you sound like.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. How important, I'm going way off topic here, but
yeah.
How important is it to have a sense of humor in a relationship?
Oh, my gosh. I would die without a sense of humor. I had a different husband once, and the sense of humor just wasn't there.
Oh,
and
we live the same life.
It's torture.
It is.
It's torture, and that's probably one of the most important things to me. I mean, he's a great guy. We just, our sense of humor, like, he just didn't, and he's so conservative. My current husband is also very conservative, but the humor factor, of cutting each other up, but I also grew up with that. So I think that's a piece of what I learned in my second marriage is that my dad was so freaking funny and had such a sense of humor. So I grew up around that kind of sarcasm, ball busting. Well, that's what I came up with last night. Well, no, there was something else too dirty. But last night, I'm like, oh, I'm such a ball buster. He's like, no, like you don't have balls. And I'm like, I'm a boot buster.
Yes, a boob buster.
Yeah, I think having that sense of humor is makes everything just so fun. Don't you want to have fun?
That's what I'm saying. Everyone is out here taking everything so serious. Everything. And I'm like, it is not that serious. And I, part of my non-negotiable, because I swore I would never get married again, ever. And part of my non-negotiable in the very toxic, what started as a very red flag marriage with my current husband. Part of my non-negotiable was like, if we aren't laughing, I can't be around you. And that's it. I mean, we're just always laughing. There's always some underlying something. Everything's a running joke.
Well, it's, since we're going to go off on tangents, I really, really love talking about divorce for a second. Coming out of that, my first marriage, and
you're married,
legally 19 years.
Wow.
Got to be physically separated. You can't live in the same house for a year to actually file for divorce. So this was going on during that was and it took a year and a half to get. But coming out of that, like I knew pretty early on, like, say on the day we got married, when I said to the officiant, like, could we just not mail this certificate in? And that's a whole nother story. But I knew that the marriage wasn't great, and I tried and I tried and I continued. And before I left, physically left, I got a therapist and I said, she's like, what's your goal? I'm like, to never choose this. Like, that was my goal for therapy.
Yep.
Like, I never want to choose this again. And I'm preparing to leave my husband. These are the things to do. And we created a checklist together. Like, she's like, I want you to create a checklist of like everything that you want.
Oh, yeah.
Man. Like, in detail, right? And so I got really, really super, like, granular things like, you know, has to be sarcastic like my dad, must be into sports and watch games on TV. Like, I wanted these things that were very specific.
Yep.
I wrote that down and I locked it up, and then I met my husband. Oh, current husband. I keep calling him current, I should call my current husband. And and one day I found that sheet, and I'd written it like a couple years prior, and him. It was so weird. And I pulled it out and I said, I gotta read something to you. And I like read the list and he goes, oh, you made a list about me.
Yeah, like 20 years ago.
Yeah. And it was so wild. And this is a lesson that I like to talk about, because this isn't just about finding your next mate. This is about finding everything that you want.
Yep.
Make the fucking list.
Make the list.
Whatever that looks like, whether it's like the ideal job, the ideal like boss, the ideal, I mean, this is a great one for like creating the list of who's your ideal leader.
Yes.
The ideal clients, the ideal client. Friends. All the, like, what does that look like in detail? Because then when you're clear on it, you start to attract it. Now, when I met him, I had no idea he checked everything off on the list because I hadn't been looking at it, but it was in my subconscious. And I'm like,
yeah.
Why are we not doing this with everything? And then
everything.
And then I was serial dating. So like, think about this in business too, like serial dating your clients to figure out who's the right mm-hmm. client. And I went through like, and people were making fun of me too, like, Gina, why don't you just take, why do you have to date right now? Even my ex-husband was like, why don't you date? And I'm like, now I am on a quest to find out who is ideal. And I can't mm-hmm. find that out until I go through all of them. And I serial dated. And that, I still hadn't looked at the list, which is crazy. And I was so frustrated in the process because I met so many morons. And long story short, I changed my profile. Yeah, on Tinder. That's where I met my husband. I'm proud of it. And the profile headline said, have your shit together.
I love it.
And I'm like, I'm going to use my marketing and sales background. Have your shit together because I do. And then I went on into it. And he was the only man to swipe. Now, I had been swiped right a million zillion times.
Mm-hmm.
All the wrong guys. And then when I wrote that, only one. That was the only one I needed.
That is so great.
I was so clear on the message. I was so clear on this is what I want.
Yeah.
He was even a little afraid. But he's like, okay, I want a woman who's got her shit together. Great.
And that the fact that he was a little afraid, this is why men are not swiping, because there's so much confidence and you owned your shit. You were like, yeah. That statement of have your shit together says everything about you. And that's intimidating, or men are intimidated by that. Not necessarily that it's intimidating, but they're intimidated because yeah. Holy shit, a woman with her shit together. And they're kind of used to the trait. Well, I guarantee.
That's what spurred it on. Ironically, mm-hmm. I like doubled down because I had dated this one guy and he was out of state and it didn't work, but we had a friendship. We ended with a friendship. And I called him one day and I said, what is wrong with me? Which was a stupid question to ask. So there's nothing wrong with me. But at that moment, I was like, because I was so new to the dating game, because I've been in a marriage for 19 years, I don't know what I don't know. And I'm like, all right, you and I didn't work out because you're in another state, but like, what's the deal? And I told him a couple of stories, and he said, here's what I'm going to tell you. He said, call me baby girl, which was kind of cute. And he's like, listen, mm-hmm. baby, here's the deal. 80% of the men automatically not going to want to give you a try because you are gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
You are smart. You don't need a man.
So exactly.
Automatically 80% out the door. The next 20%, they're going to give you a try. And then they're going to really get intimidated once they get to know you because you don't need a man. I'm like, this is bullshit. I do indeed need a man. I need a man. You just ask my husband, because he's like, how did you ever get along without me? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting that, oh my God, they're so intimidated by that. I need to double down on that. I need a man who sees me for who I am. Confident,
yep.
Yes. End of the day, I'm the girl who wants to play the girl and the wife at home.
Yep.
Because during the day, I've got to be the powerhouse. And if you can't handle that, bye, boy, bye.
Exactly.
I doubled down and I took a chance and all I needed was one.
Yep. I can attest to that. And definitely, I think a lot of people are out there in that point that you were. A lot of my listeners, because when I ask for listener request, you know, episodes, a lot of people, it's a lot of relationship stuff. And I think a lot of them are how you were in with your ex-husband. They know it's not right. And they have just had this whole conversation with themselves, especially because Jesus, 19 years, you know, people are just staying because it's the time. They freeze themselves on that. It's been so long. We put in so much. Why would we stop now? Meh. Lots of reasons.
Well, right. And so you see that, right? Again, the parallels between life and business, right? You mm-hmm. have that in business too. Well, I'm just going to stay with this client. I don't want to go out and find another one. And what if this, you know, what if I don't find the right client? I'm just going to stick with this client that's draining and drains us of money and drains my emotions. And I'm just going to stick in it. And I saw women doing the same thing. As a matter of fact, I had some women for years when I was so miserable, other women would say to me, you need to surround yourself, by the way, listen up. You got to surround yourself with the right people.
Yeah.
The fuck away from the people who have not walked exactly the walk that you did. They might have similar walks, right? Everyone's got an opinion about divorce. But
yeah.
Unless you did the same exact divorce I did, it's really hard for you to talk about it and to get it. But I would have women say to me, oh my gosh, you should just stay. No, it is hard out here. And it's hard. You're not going to find anybody. So, make the best of it and stay. And I listened to that for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought into the fear that this will be a nightmare. So let me just stay. There's a point where I'm like, I'm so miserable. How can I stay in this for the rest of my life? And anyone who's experienced any illness, let's say, as you get older, that was kind of my game changer. I'm like, I think the man who's going to be there was going to wipe my ass when I'm 85 in the
right.
hospital. that I know that they're going to have my back. And if, as I age, I want a partner. I want a friend for life. And when I first met my second husband, I'm like, I wasn't sure if I was like head over heels with him. I'm like, I could totally hang with this.
Yeah.
I could totally see myself at 85 on the porch with this dude. I don't know if I'm going to be in love with him, but I could totally hang out with him. Because it feels like home.
Oh, yep.
And then I felt like madly in love. And now I'm like ridiculously still stupidly in love with him. Like,
you can see that in you. And I love that. I love that because we need more people that are, it's not a toxic, I mean, the people that post about their relationships and their partners all day long, that's a red flag to me of like, you could see, you could read between the lines, but I love, it's empowering when I've seen you post about him, there was a shift in you.
I've seen that, right?
Was a huge shift. Yeah. He highlights the best parts of you. And I think that's what our partners should do.
Yeah, and then there are the people who are like, oh my God, you're like always out there talking about da, da, da. And then you're like, okay, so make up your mind. Do you want me to be
negative
or do you want me to be positive? Make up your mind. And I've had people criticize me of like, they think I'm not as effective or as good as I could be because I'm in La La Land. I'm like, are you kidding me? La La Land has actually gotten me to 10 times my abilities.
Yeah.
Because I have so much love and support. Someone who cooks all my meals
and
all the things. I don't know if you saw my post the other day. I'm like, I'm out of gas. My husband's out of town. What will I do?
Yeah, right. I mean, he dropped the ball there. I'm just gonna say, like, he dropped the ball. Do your job. I mean, you have one job, and it's take care of everything I need. So, duh. I'm gonna change gears again because I do want to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about your podcast, where this came from, the inspiration, just a little bit about podcasting in general. But then I want to move into the fact that you are in a transitional period. And I think this is super powerful because it's part of that, like staying in a marriage that's not serving you. So is staying in the same place you were because you think you've already branded yourself one way. So you're in the process of like rebranding and all these things. And that transition's hard. So I want to talk about kind of just that, you know, your motivation of just like staying. First of all, I think your husband is a huge part of that because of the shift I've seen in you. That's empowering to know that no matter who you lose in business, in life, in real life, at home, when you go to bed at night, you're fully supported. That like, yeah, it gives you that empowerment of just like, no matter how much you fall outside when you leave your house, no matter how many times you fall, when you come home, you're safe. And I think that's the power of having a great partner. But I've just seen that in you. So that's a great fuck the haters, like, obviously. But where did your idea for the podcast come from? How was the baby born?
Yeah, so the baby was born back in 2018 with, he had started out as my client. We became friends. And then we just started having a conversation about what it was like being women who are a little bit different. Or at least felt different or felt like we were perceived different. Like we just knew, you know, like the theater kid or the band camp kid or the
night,
right? Along those lines of we were just different in our community, especially to the small town. And there was this moment of like, okay, I just want to be exactly who I am, not worry about what anybody thinks and have a platform for that. And hopefully with that platform, help other women. And so we started talking about that of like, let's do a podcast where, you know, we talk about whatever we want to talk about and hopefully it'll help somebody. And so that's how it came to be. We kept trying to come up with a name. And I think I said, you know, we're like those women your mother warned you about. And like, we're like, oh, we'll try that. We'll hold that name for now as a placeholder. And then as we were kind of talking that idea out, Jeffrey Gittimer, you know, as another sales guru, got wind of it because I think I was in his studio I was on his show and like, oh my God, that sounds so good. You should put that under our umbrella. And so we did it under the Sell or Die network for a while until he could sell the network, just wanted to do his own podcast, not follow us kids to babysit. And
right.
So Rachel was with me for that for a few years. And then she wanted to go find her dreams, the dance studio owner, and just just wasn't the right fit for her anymore. And so one day I'm like, you should just go. And she tried quitting once before, and then I was like, she came back, and then I'm like, it's time to go.
Yeah.
And she had other things to do. And then I brought on another podcast co-host because I love collaboration.
Yeah.
And Susanna, and she was in England, but the time difference really started to play a part. She had kids, and my schedule's busy, and I'm like, all right, like I can't do it anymore. I'm like, okay. And then I was like, why do I need a co-host at all?
Right.
Right? And so many people would say to me, you know, you are the show.
Yeah.
You are the show, Gina. So just do the show. And I'm like, okay. And I had a podcast prior, which was called The Pivotal Leader. I'm like, I know how to do this. I'll just have guests on the show and do that. And so I did that all of 2023. And then my sponsor, Sales Gravy, decided they didn't want to sponsor anymore. They were going in other avenues for marketing, and it's kind of like an abrupt, we're done sponsoring you. And I was like, okay, now I gotta come up with money to produce this. All right. And as it was, kind of got a little blindsided. I was kind of surprised by it, but I'm like, okay. And I talked to several people, and I talked to my publisher, and talked to people in the podcast, and I'm like talking it out. And my buddy Jeff Bajoric, he's guy who comes on the show once in a while and is horrible, human, and hot. I tell him all that. I'll tell him that all the time.
Yeah.
And he lets me. He's like, why don't you just take a hiatus? Why don't you go on hiatus and just think about it? And then I told my publisher about it, and she said, yeah, just play reruns for a while and give yourself space. I think we work so hard to be like, no, I gotta keep going. What are people gonna say? I wasn't giving myself a space to breathe on what should the next evolution be? Why should the podcast stay exactly the same? I have changed tremendously in 5 years, so let me give it space. So I set that intention. I'm like, I'm parking it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna park it until 2024. Have more time to work on the book. Written a bunch, you know how the process is, and I'm like, I just need space. And so I've taken the space. I'm kind of noodling some ideas of, you know, what do I want to represent next. And I do have a women's mastermind group that I'm part of, and what really came out of that in the past year is creating a space for women that can show up no matter what kind of day they're having. They're having an awesome day, and it's like, oh my God, we celebrate. Having a shit day, let me wipe your tears. And not judging. And so a lot of these women have said that they have been searching for this group to belong to, hard to find that group. Because as women, we're like, oh, hey, hi, how are you, Brandon? Oh, good.
That's toxic great. Positivity, that's what I call that.
Yeah, toxic positivity, where you can't even cry because you're like, even going through a divorce, as you know, like I lost people because they're like, oh, I might get the divorce if I hang out with Gina. So all of a sudden you're like, where'd everybody go?
Right.
Like, nobody wants to be around the negative shit you're going on. Meanwhile, oh my God, look at Gina's got it going on. And they abandon you for that too.
Yep.
So being able to create community of like-minded women that have your back no matter what, who are not going to run off because they said something that hurt their feelings for a second and not what they wanted. Like, and I, as a coach, may say some things that make you uncomfortable. And if it does, you probably need to look at it. You probably got a problem.
Right. Because the truth hurts.
I don't say anything out of malice. It's all out of love. But it's having the ebb and flow of support, looking good and bad. And that's kind of where I'm at now, platform in life. And that's where I'm evolving the show, is having more of a panel of women, different perspectives, talking about whatever.
Kind of like The View without Hollywood's bias, right? Like,
boom. Yeah.
I love that.
Exactly. Exactly. So my husband's like, what, The View? He's so conservative. I'm like, it's not The View, it's like The View. It's, you know, it's a panel of women without celebrity interviews, okay? And
right.
Politics. Like, relax.
So real life, it's not influenced by views or ratings or anything else. Correct. It's real and it's raw. And that's what we need. That's why The View was so popular at from the jump, is because everybody wants that relatable perspective. And then instead of them staying honest and real with a relatable perspective, they bought into whatever paid them the most and they sold the fuck out. So.
Exactly. And I don't think I can help be a transformative agent in this world by doing that. Like,
no,
I would rather be less popular and do more good.
That I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. So you guys make sure you are following Gina. I've got her information linked in the episode bio. So you can follow her, catch up on episodes from Women Your Mother Warned You About. There are some incredible shows still even on repeat that are priceless. So stay tuned for the rebranding of that podcast.
I believe you got selected for one of the repeats.
Oh, awesome. What? You guys should just go listen because I'm on it, of course, duh. No, it's a great podcast, and I'm excited to watch this. How are you staying motivated and focused? Because I do think that we have a lot of similar. I think our brain is like special, and I think we have that. You know, we want to do everything. We want to do everything all at once. How do you stay focused, especially in a period of rebranding, to stay on track with where you want to go?
That's a great question, and I don't have it sitting in front of me right now, but I have a notebook, right? Like, I'm changing them out all the time. I fill them up, I change them out, and in my notebook, there are these long post-it notes that go in the notebook, and on these long post-it notes, I call them parking lots, and there might be two or three parking lots at the same time, and there's a parking lot of bigger picture, like the podcast, right? And there's the podcast, and there's things that have to happen under it. And it stays in the parking lot so that it is always present, that I don't forget about bigger picture. And so then I kind of toggle back and forth between, all right, which big picture item can I tackle today? And the next thing that I started doing is taking the big picture items and putting them on my calendar as tasks. So that I'm like, okay, so I'm going to hit this on this day, hit this on this day. And so that's kind of how I've been eating the elephant one piece at a time, is like, I keep it in front of me, but it's okay if it's like not opening. Like, what's the most important for me to work on right now? What needs to get parked? Like, I parked the podcast so that I can free up time to work on the book.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It doesn't make me a failure. It just makes me more efficient and more present. So that's one of the things I do, is just this parking lot system, calendaring system. I look at it every single day. I rewrite it out every night before I go to bed. I look at it in the morning, cross things off, rewrite the list. Every single night, the list gets rewritten. And there's a top of the list and there's a bottom of the list.
I love that.
Bottom of the list is big items. Top of the list is like shit that's got to happen tomorrow morning. So that's why the list gets rewritten every day. What has to happen on this day specifically? Mm-hmm. What are the big items? That's how I chew through it. And it's reduced my anxiety by just saying.
I know my listeners are rolling their eyes right now because they're like, write it down, because that's what I say all the time. Write it down, rewrite it, write it how it serves you, write it the way it feels good to you. Just keep writing.
If you don't write it down, it's not going to happen. If you don't schedule it, it's not going to happen. I don't care how special you are.
Mm-hmm.
There's just too much shit going on, too many things to do. You are not. Yep. I mean, if you are, I'd love to meet you. I'll put you on my show. I want to know how amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Do everything without writing it down.
Yeah, I want to know you too, because is there a special hack? I want a blood test. I want a DNA test. I want to know what your chromosomes look like. Like how? Yeah. Because the rest of us are going through shit. And if we don't write it down, we don't do shit.
Give us the formula and then do a TEDx talk on it.
Exactly. We'd appreciate that. So what inspired the book? Where did this... Something you always wanted to do, or something that just like...
Yeah, something I always wanted to do, for sure. People are always asking me if I have a book. that's always like a buying sign of like people want more.
More.
And they want more, and people want to hear my point of view. And I'm like, why not have it? I think from a business perspective, it's good to have. Like, you know this. Like, now I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna write a book and get rich. No, it's not that. It's like having a website.
Yeah.
Like I have to have the book, in my opinion, to just have another possibility. And the second you're like, I got a book or I'm writing a book, people have said, oh wow.
Yeah.
And so it just adds to the credibility. So that's a piece of it. And I'm pretty passionate about improvised intelligence, and I coined it. And I really saw the connection between emotional intelligence and improv, and how it can actually elevate our, like, you, there's so much out there about EQ and elevating your EQ, but no one really gives you like hardcore, like, this is what you can
right.
improve it. So that was the motivation behind it, was to give people.
I do talk a lot about emotional intelligence because I think the world is lacking. And something you said when we started talking, it cued just emotional intelligence came out for me. And it was the rehumanized conversation, because I think the more technology we have, the dumber people are getting. And it's dumb, not just like dumb. I mean, it's dumb as in like you're not emotionally present because you have this thing that you're obsessed with. You stare at all day long. You go to Google, you don't talk to people. So what inspired you with that passion about rehumanizing conversation?
You know, I'm such an observer, people. I'm such a watcher. That's probably when you talk about like what gets me hot. What gets me hot is when people are oblivious and not paying, not noticing. Like the fact that people were avoiding calling your name because like, oh, I don't know. Like,
right.
Up, like, put yourself in someone else's shoes. There is a mm-hmm. wife out there wondering what's going on with her mm-hmm. husband. Did this not cross anyone's mind?
Right.
Like, seriously, this is common sense shit. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at a picture of my dad on my shelf, and my dad was such a common sense man,
mm-hmm.
Gangsta, you know, worked for the mob kind of guy, and very common sense oriented. Mm-hmm. And I was raised with this common sense. And it makes me crazy that common sense is so common. And when I started doing all this research on emotional intelligence and common sense, right, common sense is actually something that we can improve within our DNA. Street smarts, like my dad has, get that through the experience.
Experience.
If you could combine the experience, grit, with this emotional intelligence that you have, and you more aware and more of not so oblivious to what's happening on around you,
yeah,
peripheral in the world, you're going to create better human experiences, whether it's your customers, your partners, your friends, whatever. Create those better relationships. I get crazy when I go to a store and like the cashier is on their phone, never looks up, never says hello, doesn't even notice you. This happened the other day. I went to order from a food truck.
Mm-hmm.
And I just waited. There are two people in the food truck working.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, one of them, like, their head popped up. They're like, oh! Like,
someone's here.
Did you not hear me clapping? My phone, my
pen? Right.
There's just this oblivion. So I'm kind of reading. And when we use improv. So that was a big part of the inspiration. And I, another kind of turning point was, I used to be a Vistage speaker, and I was videos and talking about emotional intelligence. And that's when I just started seeing the parallels between EQ and improv.
Yeah.
And so I was talking about empathy, and the CEO said to me, oh man, no offense guys, but, and the guy said, you know what? Not all people deserve empathy. I, like, my mouth dropped.
Yeah.
Did he just say that? Like, my inside voice was like, did he just? And I, instead of, like, reacting, right? Like, the improviser in me is like, tell me more about that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if I got to repeat over and over again, and they still can't get it right, they do not deserve my empathy. then I had, I'm like, so you got, there's two issues. You either hired wrong.
Yeah.
Or your retention training plan sucks. Like, that's, like, don't say people don't deserve empathy.
Right.
What are the full details here? And so that was a big tipping point. He was that theory.
Right. I think that that empathy, and it's the same for, like, you're talking about cashiers that are just distracted on their phone. It frustrates me when I'm in line and I see customers in front of me. That person is like looking at them trying to engage, and it's like they can't be bothered, right? They're on their phone, like they'll make the transaction when they're done. So I think it's everyone, just the level of being in that present moment is done. And I mean, technology is going to destroy us eventually because people aren't talking in it. And what would you suggest would, especially with improv, I feel like improv is going to grow your empathy, but what would you suggest now for people that are listening to just kind of expand their awareness when it comes to empathy? We ruminate on our own shit and our own insecurities, right? And that makes us unaware of what's going on around us. So what is your advice for someone to just learn? I want to challenge these bitches this week. I want you to go out and I want you to practice empathy.
Yeah, so there's two things I would suggest. One, practice observation.
Like, yeah.
Don't talk. I was at an event recently, a women's, like, international, women's international day, and someone was talking to me that knew me, and she was talking. She goes, something happened to your voice? Like, oh, you haven't, I didn't hear you talking. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm fucking listening to you.
Like, yeah,
I really practice listening in the moment, being connected with you, paying attention to you, watching your body language, listening to your tone of voice, seeing what your face is telling me, and I really practice that. Right, you're gonna learn quickly what's going on with people if you just shut up and watch. Right.
Yeah.
That's where you can start to get that. Number two, self-empathy. Practicing self-empathy. I have got a little triggers worksheet I give people. It's a triggers exercise of someone did something that pissed you off. Okay, what was the first thought that went through your head? Like,
yeah,
this asshole. Okay, what were you feeling? Okay, so you were thinking this, you were feeling this. What is it that you actually need? So someone triggered you, and I've been doing a lot of coaching around this. Someone triggered you, it's not about them, it's about you. You're getting triggered by some other shit from 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That just came back to the surface because someone's action reminded you of that and you did an association with it. So when you can get a handle of your own stuff, your own triggers, when you can self-empathize and really dig in and understand the emotion, then you can start to empathize with better. Because you know what the I'm actually coaching people together right now that have been having conflict, and I coach them separately. Now I'm coaching them together. And what was interesting is that they both have fear around their jobs. And while they had been friends, now they're going at each other because they feel competitive and they feel like people are facts, and so they're trying to one up each other in essence.
Oh.
And I was like, you guys gotta stop that shit.
Yeah.
You gotta unite. And so once I broke through, I'm like, okay, you're afraid of this, you're afraid of that, you're both going through fight or flight. And they were like, I never looked. And that was their breakthrough. And now they're horrible. Like, I love working with them because they're on the same page in this relationship, in this job that they're doing together. They're so in tune now because they have empathized with themselves. And now they can empathize with each
other. So that's your challenge. You guys work on some self-empathy and be willing to call yourself out on your bullshit, which is your trigger. It's not someone's fault for pissing you off. It's you take responsibility for why you felt, you know, the way you did.
Exactly.
I love this. What is the ballpark of the book release?
it was a June of 2024, but we're a little behind. So January 2025.
I love that. I want you guys to make sure you are following Gina. You will be entertained. I promise you that. It is an adventure. Definitely something that highlights my day, because there, you know, there's a lot of different people out there. And there's, you know, when I see Gina come up on Facebook, I'm like, that's funny. I love seeing your shit. So I think you're doing, you're doing so amazing. I'm excited for your rebranding. I definitely want to have you back on the show on the other side of this so we could talk about the shit, right? Because I get you guys, rebranding is not easy, and there's a lot of self-doubt that comes up, as you know, like you trigger yourself when you go through a rebranding. Because I rebranded, I pivoted a lot, and anybody who listens to the beginning of my podcast would be like, yeah, she's not the same person. And you know, there's this part of you that like doesn't, you feel like you have to stay there because of other people, you know, well, I already brought them here. So I want to talk about the shit, but I want to do it on the other side of your rebranding, because I'm going through it too. So we'll collect the shit stories. You know, that's what I love to share with people, to see that it's real. There's no magic wand you wave and suddenly you wake up and everything falls into place. It's a grind.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. It's a grind, and you got to be patient, and you got to give yourself grace and just flow.
Exactly. I challenge you guys to check out for local improv and just go have some fun. Go have some fun. I don't know how else to get you to bring out that kid part of you other than terrifying yourself by being on stage in front of people. I think it's huge. I know a lot of people in sales and marketing that use improv, and I've seen the benefit it can give. So if you need an outlet, get into the improv. Make sure you're following Gina and staying current on what's going on. Watch her, you know, revamp of the podcast, catch up on old episodes, and make sure you review the podcast, both of them, Listen Bitch and Women Your Mother Warned You About, because that's what helps us. That keeps us on the map and brings people into our audience here. Any last words of wisdom you want to give everybody today?
Thank you. Just be you, and don't worry about anybody else, and be open. Be open to coaching and feedback from people who have your best interests in mind. But at the end of the day, still do what is right for you.
Amen to that. And listen, bitch, dream big. Life is too short to play small. Embrace who God called you to be. Own your shit and be brave as you step into your full potential as a co-creator. Until next time, love yourself in the mess. Okay. This is Brandon Lynette here reminding you of your potential with a side of chaos. You're in the arena. Keep swinging.